keep an eye on what he's doing. I guess should check out the next Board of Supervisors meeting when Kate Canales comes up for some kind of temporary appointment or confirmation. She's the right of Danner, I should say, to the right wing of Danner, person who Danner kind of handpicked for the new district attorney, and perhaps we'll be talking about that a bit later. I shouldn't get into these spats with you, caller. We all have a right to our opinions, and, you know, we can only say that opinion so many times without becoming unduly repetitious, and I will try not to repeat myself too much. And I certainly hope, along with the caller, that the curfew along the levee and the youth curfew are both lifted, because I think that's long overdue. We need to decriminalize, not increase areas of criminalization. It's the wrong way to go. We have a lot of time today here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. That's the station you're listening to. We are Micro Power Radio in the Santa Cruz area. You can contact us off air at 427-4523 or at frsc@cruzio.com or at Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Again, those numbers, 427-4523 for our voicemail, email frsc@cruzio.com and Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Another caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hi, this is Becky Johnson calling in. I wanted to respond to some of the things that Bob and Monica said that last call. Covered a lot of ground, mostly about the river levee and the youth curfew. Now, some of the points, certainly one can argue that the river levee is unsafe at night, and he couldn't recall any incidences of crime, specific incidents. I do recall several rapes along the river, along the levee of homeless women. Women were, you know, forced to sleep there because they had to hide from the cops because of the sleeping ban. They couldn't, they sleep in a little bit more public place. So, you know, that's true. However, the if you look countywide at statistics on rape and assault against women, the most dangerous place for women to be is in their own home with their boyfriend or their mate. And certainly Bob would not advocate outlawing being inside your home to prevent crime.
Well, it depends on whether it was voted in by legislative representatives who considered the issue reasonably and dealt with that expanding right rate of violence in the home. Sorry, I'm just a little joke there.
Yeah. I also thought that as I recall in that whole levy debate, there were a couple articles that appeared in the Sentinel in the weeks, about 2 weeks and 1 week before the vote came up, about gangs and crime and drug dealing along the levee. However, all the reports that we were getting were from sting operations that were being done by CNET along the levee. And, Santa Cruz, I'm not aware of a big gang problem in Santa Cruz, along the levee or anywhere else. And, you know, people say that there's a problem with gangs. Maybe I'm just really out of it, but I suspect it's a very small phenomenon in this city. Now, the other thing I want to say about the curfew debate was, as I recall, that first it happened in August when all the schools were out. All the colleges, Cabrillo and UCSC students were away. There were plenty of young people in town in August, but they were all from places like Connecticut and Ohio. They weren't local.
You're talking about the youth curfew?
The youth curfew. Secondly, we only really heard about it. It was posted in the Sunday paper, a small little bit in the Karen Clark article that mentioned that they were going to have a first reading of a...
the first reading happened in July, not in August. August, there were no city council meetings, but yeah, that's correct.
Right.
It was
yeah.
July.
Yeah, that must have been July.
July of 1997.
Mm-hmm. But and the first reading was on Tuesday, and even Celia Scott said that she was surprised at how fast it was sprung on them. But when we got down there on Tuesday, Police Chief Belcher, who apparently had been the one who'd pressured to have this item put on the agenda at all, he had about 30 advocates lined up to testify in favor of a youth curfew. But, you know, so they've had more than 2 days' notice, certainly. So the whole way that, that youth curfew was engineered and brought about was designed to avoid public comment and avoid public scrutiny and just kind of get it done. And only Celia Scott really opposed it when it occurred. So those were some of the comments I wanted to make.
I appreciate the specific information. I didn't recall a lot of that, although as you mentioned, it does come back to me. Thank you, Becky, and I know you worked a lot about the, around you.
Bob also mentioned a man who was shot just because some guy felt like shooting somebody. That occurred right across from the courthouse. It wasn't on the levee. It was on Water Street. It was near the levee, this is true, in broad daylight, and it was a homeless man who was shot.
And, of course, there was that other guy that was shot on November 12th, but we won't go into poor Happy John Dine. We've been hearing too much about that. I'm sure that that might be an argument for disarming the police, but I doubt that, and indeed, police shootings are becoming more and more frequent these days, not necessarily in Santa Cruz, but generally across the country. And some of us feel that's a good argument for disarming the police or taking action, so maybe I shouldn't criticize callers who feel that there's an increase in crime generally, though I don't think generally that's true, at least if we are to believe government statistics, which again is another problematic question.
Well, for whatever reason, the public governments are reporting that across the board crimes are dropping. And that was actually predicted because of some of the...
Demographics.
Demographics, really, exactly, yeah. Of the aging population, as the baby boomers age and get older. Most of the vast majority of crime is committed by individuals 15 to 25.
Well, that could be a good argument for putting all those people into, I say, cells during that period of time, simply for their own protection. But let's talk about that later.
Oh, well, obviously our 15 to 25-year-olds need more support and guidance than they're getting. Mm-hmm. Certainly more than other, you know, segments of the population may need. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Becky.
And you're tuned to your educational station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, at 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norris. We are running into a few early issues here. I think I ruffled a few feathers, perhaps, or struck at least one caller as being a little too extreme in calling for the Homeless Services Center to allow its clients to attend First Amendment activities downtown and still allow them transportation up to the only emergency shelter that really is available so they won't become criminals at night. And I didn't think that was an extreme position. I still don't. But I can deal with the fact that there are those who have different opinions on that, though I'm afraid Bob and I are going to have to come to fisticuffs if we ever hit the streets together. Just kidding about that, of course. There are some really serious disagreements happening and some serious violence going on. Here's an interview with a man named Bear Lincoln, who spoke with us at the police violence forum that happened down in Monterey County, actually happened at Monterey Peninsula College, I think it was, about 2.5 months ago. And I've been talking about playing this tape for a long time, and now I'm actually going to do it. Bear Lincoln will speak for himself. He's a Native American who has been subjected to, well, he was put on trial for murder, essentially because it wouldn't let him explain his own circumstances. Let's hear from Bear Lincoln talking about police violence and his own case.
The Brown Valley Indian Reservation, which is up north, about 2 hours north of San Francisco, and on April 14, 1995, my friend and myself walked into a police ambush that was, that the police had set up on a, in the mountains, in some trees on a dirt road, and they were investigating a homicide that was, that happened earlier that afternoon, like about 6 in the afternoon. And my friend and I, when we walked into this ambush, it was at night, like about 10 o'clock, and there was no warnings, no lights, no anything, just the first things we heard was M16 gunfire. My friend was killed instantly. I was almost killed. I was wearing a hat at the time, and there was a hat hole in the bullet hole, so that tells you how close you know, I came to being killed. So and I wasn't arrested right away. I was I got away. I was on the run for 4 months until I got a defense team, and then I came forward and we went to a trial. I was charged with killing a police officer. Officer died right along with my friend, and I was they were trying to put me to death. They were trying to give me the death penalty. An all-white jury acquitted me of all the murder charges. My charges of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter. The jury was hung on manslaughter, 10-2 in favor of acquittal. The police, they just swept over the reservation while I was on the run looking for me, doing warrantless searches, pulling guns on elders and children. Fortunately, no one else was killed, but that's kind of a miracle itself, because they were way out of control. The jurors, after the trial, some of them have become activists themselves, and we've had these jury forums, we call them. We have some in Berkeley and other places, and these jurors, they come out and they speak out on my behalf. They speak out about the police brutality and what the things that the police did. And some of their own words is they use police frenzy. When an officer was killed, the police just went crazy. And they use the words war zone. The police created a war zone. When this first homicide happened on the reservation, the law enforcement, they seen their opportunity to have a hunt for Indians. And they came to the reservation to play cowboys and Indians, and this was their chance to make a kill. And so they shot the first Indian that came walking down that road. They didn't know really who it was. They thought maybe it was a suspect, but they knew it was an Indian, because this was 10 o'clock at night. You couldn't see very good. They didn't put on any lights or anything. And so my friend was killed, and afterwards, like 15 minutes afterwards, some of my relatives arrived on the scene trying to flee. There was so much gunfire. There was like several hundred police rounds that went off in this ambush. And when members of my family arrived trying to flee the scene, because the home was just like a quarter mile away, officers asked them, "Is this the suspect?" Because the officers didn't even know. So they were told several times that was not the suspect they were looking for. And it's a really kind of a long story, but right now what's happening currently is selective law enforcement. Like, because I defended myself against law enforcement, and I had a weapon, I fired back to save my own life. Now the service department up there in Minnesota County, I guess to them, I have, myself and my relations have no police protection coming. I, me being a man in good physical condition to protect myself, but other people, family, children, teenagers, they don't get any protection from law enforcement either. While I was incarcerated fighting this case, one man shot at my mother. He tried to kill her. Shot at her with a .30 caliber rifle. He just missed her head by inches. The DA never filed charges, the man was released. And other incidents like that, is happening up there on the reservation now. So that's pretty much where I'm at now. Thank you. Next speaker is Mary Alice Rodriguez.
And we may get on to that next speaker in a bit. Kind of step away from that forum, come back up into the present for a moment. Kind of looking at the Santa Cruz Sentinel, we heard the earlier caller refer to the sort of New Year's column that the Santa Cruz Sentinel has. There's a new reporter covering city council politics named Daryl Cole, who is alternately infuriating and kind of vaguely encouraging. It's kind of a frustrating circumstance reading his stuff. Those of you who follow the Santa Cruz Sentinel, particularly interested in homeless issues, issues of poverty, issues of civil rights for poor people. An example of this is an article in the Insider's column of December 29th, which he apparently writes. And that Insider's column is headed Purse Strings Attached. If the new city council wants to expand the powers of the Citizens Police Review Board, it will cost money. While it is only one of 11 police review boards in the entire state, it has the smallest annual budget, $60,000. There's really no one single model for a board, said Lisa Rose, who chairs the four-year-old board, but it's still a new concept, and we are in a continual act of creation. To a certain degree, it's all attached to dollar signs. The council will have to deal with the realities of the budget and weigh it with other priorities, which, of course, is a totally meaningless sort of series of sentences to me, typical kind of bureaucratic double talk. But leaving that aside, Councilmember Mike Watkins says he thinks it may be time to expand the board's role. I think there is a general sense we should have a review board look at every situation if we think it's necessary. I think if they tell us they need help, we need to listen. Now, it's interesting that Cole quotes the two people who are least likely to provide any kind of effective police review, or let's say certainly less likely than others. Lisa Rose, who's the chair of the board, who's cut back oral communications on the board, who voted against having open hearings or an independent investigation or an early investigation of either Brian Andrus or Happy John Dine, the two men shot by police, one of them shot dead, the other shot five different ways from Sunday. In a home invasion the police staged back in March. So Lisa Rose is essentially an ineffectual, I think she's a, I'm not sure if she's a lawyer or not. I know that she is a, she has been, to me, not just personally hostile in terms of criticism of the board, but she has been unwilling to take action that would make the board effective given the powers it has. And there's no, of course, discussion or inkling of that. It's simply, you know, the question of more money, which I don't know if I favor more money or not for the police review board. In a sense, I do, because I'd like to see them have more options. In another sense, I don't, because I think it gives the illusion that somehow it's the money that's keeping them back when actually it's the political will. Mike Rotkin, who has actually been criticized by the police department at different times, but is actually no real critic of the police department generally, at least since he's been on the city council in the last 20 years, is again another person you don't want to go to talk about effective police review. You might want to talk to people like John Malkin, talk to people who are concerned about the Happy John Dine slang, talk to police, individuals who have been hurt by the police and have seen the police review board rubber stamp what the police department does. And that's what the media does in big cities like San Francisco when someone is shot. They go to the family and they talk to the family. Here, however, when they're talking about police review, they get the sort of the press release statement from the board and they run with it. And that, of course, is unfortunate. But hopefully we can change that, partially because the city council itself has nominally moved to the left. That is to say, voters elected Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar at the last election, and these guys at least made sounds to the effect that they want more effective police review. Whether they're going to do anything about it, of course, is something we have to see. And we can begin to see that on Tuesday at City Council, when the City Council Commission appointees make their statements to the council. That's in the afternoon. There may not be an evening session, or there may be if the commission appointees' statements extend long enough. And there are 17 commissions. That's a lot of commissions. I'm got to admit ignorance as to a lot of these commissions. I kind of focus on ones like police review and parks and rec that seem to fall within areas that I've got some knowledge of and had some involvement with. But a lot of this process will be interesting to see what kinds of searching questions, if any, the new city council members pose and what kind of appointments they make. I'm hoping that there will be a public comment period, although that's not currently on the city council agenda for the afternoon session. Why is all this politics important to politicians who generally don't care about basic rights for poor people and the average person? Well, because three of these council members, at least, to some extent came from an activist insurgency against the indifference and the big money politics and the business as usual, redevelop it all approach of Rotkin and Matthews and Kennedy that presumably means we have some kind of alternatives, or at least we can start insisting that we should have those alternatives given what these three new people said. And I've been rather critical of them in terms of their inaction around the sleeping ban, particularly that of Tim Fitzmaurice. Cronin and Sugar have actually been trying in limited ways to do something, often ineffectually, and they don't do as much as they should or even what they have committed themselves to doing, but they have made some gestures, and that is an important thing to me, and I think that that has to be credited, as distinguished from Mayor Byers, for instance, who's been pretty darn horrible. Now, some people can say, well, Byers is revisiting the camping ban, and we should be so happy for that. My view of this is best described by reading this flyer, which I just wrote. And perhaps we should have a musical break first so people can take a long breath, since this is a long flyer coming up. Get ready for a long flyer after this musical break. First, let's hear from Kristen Lems, and then steel yourself to hear the flyer, City Council's Winter Advice to the Homeless, Don't Sleep Until February.
Investing everything you have to give. Investing everything you have to give. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. We will never give up. Your strength, your patience, your sense of humor, and occasional beams, the love and support of people you love very much. But we will never give up. In return, I had nothing to offer you but this, your pride in being a woman, all the dreams that you have for your daughters, your pride in being a woman, the dreams that you have for yourself. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. With the knowledge that at the end of your days, you will
You've Got to Give Up Sometime. That's Kristen Lems, a singer from the late 70s. A strong feminist, good singer, never giving up. I actually corresponded with her for a little while. She's got some fine tapes, and you'll occasionally hear them on Free Radio Santa Cruz, particularly on my show, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, going late today, probably till 2 or 3, depending on when the axe falls. I have a meeting I have to get to, but until then, I'm yours, and hopefully you're ours. So give us a call at 427-3772. That's our call-in line here on this show. Give us your views. Well, as promised, here's the flyer. City Council's winter advice to the homeless: don't sleep till February. Mayor Byers blocked reform on December 8th. Only pressure from advocates in the community persuaded the mayor to put any homeless topics at all on the last council meeting before Christmas recess on December 8th. We interrupt the reading of this flyer to take one of your calls.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. I'm calling in to save your audience from a long flyer moment.
Uh-oh.
I just felt that it was my civic duty.
I appreciate that. I think that we were all grateful to you.
So, Robert, how come no callers? What's the deal? This is really important stuff.
Well, as you can see, you are stemming the tide, caller.
Well, this is Roxanne, Robert, and I called in because I'd really like to encourage everyone who's listening to start watching the police and start making reports about what they see and to call in the hotline that was set up at the Community Action Board. Mm-hmm. Even if they're not the person who was hurt or harassed or manhandled, I'd really like to see the community start getting involved instead of saying, did you see that? That's terrible. Or the fact that they can kind of do it anonymously is nice, because people are often afraid of the Santa Cruz police feeling that they'll be hurt themselves.
People afraid of our police department?
Of course. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that if they give the date and approximate time of the incident, then it can be checked against police incident reports and radio in calls.
You know, let me give that number out for those of you who don't have it. The number, if you are a person who has gotten a sleeping ticket or been hassled for sleeping, or want to make a complaint about something around the sleeping ban issue, is 457-9754, extension 411, like information 411. Again, it's 457-9754, extension 411. If you want to make a broader complaint about something else that's happened with the police department, you can give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which is a sort of an independent group that's been operating for about a decade in Santa Cruz. They're very low profile. They're understaffed. Nick Whitehead is one of the main people who works with them. And that number is 475-2012.
And now, what would they do with that complaint? Since I've never heard of them.
Yeah, well,
I'd like to know how active they are.
They aren't very active, but what they tend to do is they log the complaints, they call back, they do a little research around the complaints, they talk to the Citizens Police Review Board about the complaints, sometimes they come to City Council. It becomes a part of the public record in some sense, depending on the energy of Nick Whitehead, because he's the person who does that. The problem, the Community Action Board line is usable, but it's primarily there for sleeping ban and sleeping harassment complaints to let City Council know if it's December 8th directive of the police department that people should only be ticketed for sleeping on complaint or after warning is being followed. And we're finding, of course, that it's not in many cases.
Well, I'm advocating because there's an open line regarding the police that people call when they see someone harassed.
Right.
I think since it's available, and I can't imagine that it's all day swamped with calls.
I don't think so.
Let's just get that number busy.
That might well be very good, and if then Paul Brindell, who covers the line, finds it's a little too off topic, maybe he can set up a second line.
Well, maybe the need will be recognized.
Exactly. And if that line doesn't work for you, you can always call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We take an active interest in police misconduct at Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You don't have to be homeless to report police misconduct. There actually was a group that formed in the aftermath of the Happy John Dine shooting last year called Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure. And we're in touch with that group, which again, is, these are largely sort of shadow ghost groups that contain a lot of the same activists who are concerned with police misconduct and violations of civil rights. But again, the phone number of the Brindell line, the Community Action Board sleep line, which Roxanne, you're suggesting also be used for police misconduct, is 457-9754, extension 411. 423-HUFF is the HUFF line. If you want to call me up when I'm off the air, and there's usually a lot of tape on my machines, you can give as long a report of whatever the police have been doing as you'd like, and people have done that on my line. And, of course, you can always call Roxanne. Well, perhaps not.
Well, the only thing that I'm suggesting is most of the time that I've seen people harassed, they are homeless or without resources. So I don't think that those calls would be about probably much else.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's why I'm advocating for that.
Well, you know, while I have you on the phone, Roxanne, I know that you've taken a sort of, as I have, a dim view of the police review board, believing, as perhaps as I do, that they
boy,
are...
Boy, dim as even, you know.
I mean, like they are, they're, it's like they're sort of an invisible fig leaf for the police department.
Well, Steve Belcher does his own PR. As soon as anything in the Sentinel comes up about police misconduct, you'll see right above it a statement by police, you know, Chief Steve Belcher about how they conduct their business. It'll always be a sort of a general thing, not really pertaining to the incidents that's in the paper, but they don't, you know, do anything without a citizen complaint. They always give warning. That's kind of how he always keeps his sort of PR, and people believe it for whatever reason, I'm not sure. I think Happy Dine is a really good example of just how far people will go when their lives are truly not in danger to shut someone up. So, the other thing, I wanted to talk for just a minute, Robert, and again, to save your...
Oh, no, please go ahead. This flyer will be available for those of you who are just dying to hear it down at the New Leaf Market if you want to get down there today.
Don't worry. They'll get a chance to hear it if you're on the air till 2:30 today.
I'm afraid they probably will.
No, the one thing I wanted to say, I've been giving a lot of thought to our new city council and to the lack of action for any kind of emergency measure for the homeless, such as letting them even sleep under the eaves of City Hall. Anyone that knows about frost knows that frost descends. So even if you're under a portico or some sort of shelter, that freezing kind of thing won't get you quite, it really won't, you won't get frostbite, basically.
Well, don't try to go under the shelter downtown. The police down there will drive you away because it's illegal to sit even outside a shop that's closed if you're 10 feet from a window or doorway.
Right. So what I wanted to say, I really want to talk about the new city council, is I've been looking at things and really trying to figure out what the hell has happened since these guys took off. And I see the main thing is that their power has been split already. That although we elected them on a slate and trusted them to work together, they've already been split up by Catherine Byer. By her inserting herself and putting herself on a committee for the homeless. Then, as you know, with the Brown Act, those three participants cannot talk to a fourth city council member.
Yeah, you're referring to the camping subcommittee, which consists of Catherine Byers, Chris Crone, and Keith Sugar, rather than the third person elected in that 63% majority in November, Tim Fitzmaurice.
That's right. So he is out of the loop, and it successfully, they have already split our group. And I'm sorry that our men are so new to political office and so naive that they let this happen. I do not believe that Catherine Byers intends to do anything this winter for the homeless. They are studying the
camping ban
until February. By which time the cold will be over. I believe that she is waiting it out until the cold weather is gone. And this is, cannot then be the issue that it once was in the winter of one of the coldest winters that we've ever known. So we did not elect Catherine. Catherine supposedly has her heart in the right place. That is what everyone has said. But we did elect the three men, and we worked hard for them, and I do expect them to team up, and I expect them to trust each other. I expect that when one makes a motion, the other supports it, or the other two support it. I do not expect people to say, well, gee, I didn't study the issue, therefore I couldn't support the person. They all said they wanted to do something about disenfranchised humanity, about citizens being more in control of this city. So although I'm not as hard on them as you are, Robert, I am fast getting pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also Keith Sugar has taken a lot of heat in the media for actually going with his conscience and bringing a motion that then, of course, did not pass because Tim Fitzmaurice didn't get talked to about it prior. He could not make the decision standing on his feet.
And Catherine Byers opposed it.
And
as well.
Catherine Byers opposed it, yes.
We're talking, for those who don't remember, about the motion that there should be ticketing of people for sleeping this winter only if there is a real health and safety concern. And that motion, which was really an attempt to simply put the police department on notice to hold off, it didn't really provide a lot of protection, but provided a little, was made by Keith Sugar and seconded by Chris Krohn, and then was essentially dissed and dashed and dumped by Rotkin, the minority council person, who I used to call the shadow mayor because he had a lot of power back in the old council, and Barisoni, city attorney, and surprisingly enough, Catherine Byers, the new mayor. I'm sorry for the interruption.
My feeling is, as much as I like Catherine Byers personally, that anyone that drives a Jaguar is really not suffering too much this winter and has the time that it takes, February, year 2000, whatever, to make this decision. And during the beach flats, redevelopment plan, I tried to give her the benefit of the doubt, thinking that she didn't make motions because they didn't have the vote. And truthfully, they did very little until the 11th hour to help us. It wasn't until important people like Fred Keeley and Marty Wormout, so even the county got involved, that these people that supposedly were really, you know, had their hearts in the right place, spoke up and made great statements. And we clapped and we screamed, and thank you for doing that, but you know what? You cannot rest on your laurels, Catherine. I won't allow her to, and I don't think any of the people that worked so hard in this election will. She better put her money where her mouth is, all of her money.
Wow. They don't call you rough-tongued Roxanne for nothing.
No one calls me that but you, Robert.
Well, there must be a reason I do.
No, I've been looking at this, and I see that the people that we worked so hard to put in power have already been effectively split off from communicating with each other. And I forgive them because they're new to political life, because they believe that Catherine can get the influence of important people, other people who drive Jaguars, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that. I don't believe that she's trying. And I don't believe that we need a majority rule to help a disenfranchised group. I don't really care whether people agree with us. Whenever there's a fragile group of humans that need, you know, such help, I believe it's our duty, and no one ever puts it to a vote whether we just let people die or not. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think we should have a vote as to whether to save that person from the ice over there, who's drowning in the river.
I'm really worried because we don't have any statistics here that I can find, and I don't know who would keep them, but I'm sure that we have deaths just like San Francisco. It's been no milder here, and people have been no kinder here. You know, so I can't really believe that there hasn't been bad things and fatalities.
You know, Roxanne, you made a very good point at the last, I guess, and the only meeting Chris Krohn had of this, I thought it was to be a subcommittee meeting, but it turned out just to be him and a bunch of us activists a couple of weeks ago. And you also made that point again more recently in a breakfast conversation we had, which was that the Social Security goes after protecting certain classes of people with, like, children with genetic disorders.
Well, actually, the federal government did it.
Tell us about that.
Well, I used to be a case manager for California Children's Services, and that is a county program that's mandated. It's a federal program, but it's the county distributes the money. And it takes care of children with life-threatening genetic anomalies and then terminal illnesses or life-threatening illnesses. So children on the caseload have AIDS, they have spinal bifida, they have leukemia, all kinds of cancers. And the reason this program was set up is that families, even with insurance runs out very quickly. There's always a cap on insurance. And so families were still left with children that the hospitals will not provide pro bono services for anymore. That used to be a way that people would get their needs met, is that the hospitals themselves would have a fund. But that's happened less and less, and there's more and more of these children. So the federal government capped Social Security. Now, this would not make me happy or you happy, honestly. Let's face it, since we put that money in all of our lives, and they're talking about Social Security money running out before we can even draw on it as seniors. However, the federal government saw fit to protect this very fragile group of children by setting up a program where their hospital expenses, their treatments, were paid. As long as they were doctor-ordered and not in the experimental stage. So they didn't ask us, and it didn't go to a vote. If it had gone to a vote, I trust that since there's a small percentage of American citizens that have these kind of children, that it might have been defeated because the money came out of Social Security. We didn't get the chance to vote, and the reason that we didn't is something had to be done for these kids. So, in almost the same thing with the Older Americans Act, you know, I actually ran a program for years that was a result of the Older Americans Act. And that was protecting fragile seniors and keeping them in their homes rather than putting them in convalescent hospitals. So, there's been all kinds of grants and all kinds of things done over our lifetime and before that were set up to protect fragile groups of people. I can think of no one more fragile than someone who is not getting adequate medical care. And trust me, you don't. I mean, as a Medi-Cal recipient, I can tell you that you could die in Santa Cruz. The care is so, so bad. And, you know, it just, people who aren't eating right and who are afraid. I think fear takes a toll, the stress of fear takes a toll. And I, you know, honestly, Robert, I don't consider myself an activist. No one saw my name before the beach flats issue. They really didn't see it. You know, I was basically recovering from working for the county. No, just kidding. But, you know, I wasn't real active, although I definitely had my opinions about things. And when the homeless... When I got involved in the beach flats issue, which would have made 162 families homeless, this is an extension of that, as far as I'm concerned.
The sleeping ban controversy?
Well, I really do. I believe it's another way of picking on poor people and making sure that they just leave this town.
No question. No
question.
And
it's all the same thing.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
not, there's really no difference. And so, when you call me an activist, it's just that these are issues that are really close to my heart. And also, I live on such a small amount of money that I could be homeless within a month easily. Very easily.
You know, while we're on the line, I know that you're concerned about the Police Review Board being something of a hoax. I touched on this at the beginning of our call. I have a flyer in front of me called People's Tribunals, an answer for the Santa Cruz community, which I probably showed to you.
Yes.
And you've been talking about some kind of other mode of reviewing police or controlling police misconduct than going to a sort of a city-appointed bureaucracy, like the Citizens Police Review Board. I think you may have talked about it a little bit in the past, but I wonder if you haven't had any new thoughts on that, or...
Well, I don't consider the Police Review Board a hoax. What I consider it is made up of primarily conservative people who the police convince over and over again that they would just never do the things that people say they would do. You know, just like a minister or anyone else, the police command a tremendous amount of respect. The doctor. It takes a lot to bust the police. So what I would really like to do is get a group of people together who not only watch the police, but watch the Police Review Board, and who definitely make the police prove that it happened otherwise, whether it's just through the media or what. Now, the hard part is the Sentinel, being the lame duck newspaper that it is and the primarily conservative newspaper, probably would not take press releases on police brutality and police misconduct. So it's hard, as in the election that we just experienced.
I guarantee you the street shit sheet would definitely take those press
releases. Well, but how many people read that? It's people who already know how sucko it is.